I'm a parent.
Would someone in the back mind shutting the doors for us, just so that we get keep the noise out? We'll get started. Thank you. I also would like to remind everyone to please turn off your cell phones or put them on vibrate. And if you need to take a call, please go outside. We won't be offended, but it's better than you whispering into your phone while we're trying to talk up here. And just shut the door quietly as you go in and out. These doors tend to slam. So good morning. This is Improving Health Outcomes for Inner City Children. I'm Danielle. I'll be your moderator and one of your presenters this morning. I'm wearing both my hats. And the focus of this is working with community groups and other resources within the community to expand programs for children in some innovative ways, children and adolescents, actually. And our first presenter is Arlene Schneier, who is the Director of Planning and Development at the Division of Adolescent Medicine at Children's Hospital Los Angeles.
Good morning. My talk today is about promoting structural change in a group of homeless youth-serving agencies to promote trauma treatment. And I noticed that our schedule today is pretty diverse, so I'm very interested in the common themes that we'll hear over the course of the few presentations. I have nothing to disclose. I'm going to be talking about a model called ARC that was developed at the Justice Resource Institute in Brookline, Massachusetts, and it's not where I work, and I don't have any personal connection to that. So the learning objectives as I submitted were to describe the ARC model as it relates to trauma, the strategies that we've used to promote agency and system level change, and two examples of structural change that were achieved in promoting our system of care. Just as a background, we're part of a network of eight agencies called the Hollywood Homeless Youth Partnership in Los Angeles. And we're eight agencies who are working with homeless young people and helping to transition homeless youth from the street to more stable housing. And through our network and our collaboration, we try to extend the continuation of services. We do advocacy, we identify service gaps, and we've also done some research together. And we're also starting to tackle more best practices, implementing evidence-based practices across our network, and improving the quality of care. In 2005, we received funding from SAMHSA as a part of the National Child Traumatic Stress Initiative. And actually, I'm the director of that project, so I also wear multiple hats at my agency. And we've been really trying to transform service delivery in our network from a trauma-informed perspective. So just a little bit of background on homeless youth. Homeless youth usually present with multiple overlapping problems. They have medical problems, substance abuse, and mental health issues, as well as many other issues as well. Most youth experience traumatizing events before they became homeless, and most of these are in the caregiving system, the people often who are there are supposed to protect and defend these young people have often been abusive, and that could be at home, that could be in foster care, that could be in the juvenile justice system. And we have data that shows upwards of 60% experienced some sort of child abuse, 40% of them were removed from their home, sometime by Child Protective Service. These kids have experienced lots of interpersonal trauma. Then they get on the street, and there's immense trauma and stress associated with living on the street, figuring out where you're going to stay, figuring out who you can trust, where you can put your stuff so that it's safe. And young people have very few resources to manage their stress. Like when you think, when we have a rough day, we may go home and watch TV. No TV. Or we may go home and listen to music. Oh, no iPod, no stereo system. We may take a bath. Maybe they don't have a bath or access to a bath or shower. So they have very few resources to manage their stress. And then they're living in an environment where alcohol and drugs are very available. So obviously lots of these young people use alcohol and drugs to manage their stress. I guess what's not on the slide, which is probably most important, is that most of these young people are not coming to us looking for mental health services, although we may think that that's what they need or should want, but they're coming with concerns about their needs for everyday living, and they're also coming from experiences where they may have been assessed and examined multiple times by mental health professionals in ways that were not very helpful to them. They may have been labeled, they may have been forced to go into therapy that was not productive for them, so they actually may even be avoidant of mental health services. So here we have this conflict with this group of young people who've been enormously impacted by their traumatic experiences. It's affected their development, their biology, their ability to interact with service providers, and we believe strongly that it interferes with their ability to get off of the streets. They're not able to make the connections that they need with service providers and housing folks, yet they're not really interested in the traditional services that folks have to help them deal with the effects of this trauma. So then we're stuck in this place. How do we help create a healing environment for these young people when they're really not wanting individual or group mental health services? So this is where we started using the ARC model, which stands for attachment, self-regulation, and competency. And it's a framework by Kinniberg and Blaustein, and if you look it up on the web, there's some materials on the web. They also have a manual. And in 2005, when we were first looking at what we were going to do with young people, we found this framework and really liked it, and I'm just going to talk to you about what it is and how we're using it. We selected it because we wanted an approach that acknowledged the continuum of exposures in terms of traumatic exposures for homeless youth. Lots of trauma programs are really designed for young people who or children who've had one terrible, horrible, bad thing happen to them, and homeless youth usually have dozens of terrible, horrible, bad things happen to them, and they're still living in an environment where it's not all okay. They're not at home with a mom or a dad or a caring adult who can provide them with a safe environment, so they have some continuous exposure, which is considered a complex trauma. So we wanted to address the impact of complex trauma. We needed services that we could embed into our whole network of services. We wanted to be flexible to the developmental stage for these adolescents, you know, and build on their strengths and help address their deficits. And we definitely need something that's flexible. The agencies that we work with include faith-based agencies, agencies that are for shelter, drop-in, healthcare. So we're really a diverse network, and we're serving a diverse group of young people. Very ethnically diverse. About 30% of our youth are gay, lesbian, bisexual, or transgender. And we serve a broad age range from 12 to 24. And then we wanted a framework that addresses our individual and systemic needs and strengths. So the core principles of ARC are that trauma derails healthy development, and we know this from a biological and a psychological point of view. Trauma doesn't occur in a vacuum. The trauma has happened with these young people in context of their relationships with others. And that good intervention goes beyond individual therapy. So the three core domains of ARC are a safe caregiving system. And for young people who are not in homes, this means us. This means their social workers, their case managers, the youth advocates that they come in contact with agencies. And the three domains really are trying to address the domains that are impacted by trauma, because trauma impacts on a young person's ability to connect to young people because they've been betrayed by people who are supposed to care for them. So we're trying to build attachment and build trust. Trauma also impacts on young people's ability to sort of know what they're feeling, express what they're feeling. So we need to help them build those skills again, sort of their self-regulation skills, to know how to calm themselves down when they're getting upset. And we also need to build them up in terms of feeling competent and like they're important in the world and there are things that they can do on their own or with the help of others. So this is just a little bit more information about attachment. And again, this has caregiving language, but we've adapted this to really mean our service providers. So our service providers have to be able to tolerate kids that are out of control, that we have to help contain them when they can't contain themselves. We have to see their behavior as their coping skills for their traumatic experience. They need to know that they can count on us for consistent and predictable responses and for creating routine in a life that may have never had any routine. In terms of self-regulation, we need to help them build skills in terms of understanding emotion and where their affect comes from. We do lots of psychoeducation about trauma. They need tools to help regulate their emotional experiences and build skills about how to communicate effectively. And in terms of competency, we need to give them opportunities to act purposefully, to share their opinions, to think about delayed response. And some of this is a normal, adolescents want things now. And I have two of them, so I know. So we're helping them build some of their competencies to think ahead and to talk about, if I do that, what will be the consequences for me? And then they need to think of themselves as unique people, people who have agency, who are important in the world. And then there's all the developmental tasks. You know, young people on the street have become survivors, but lots of the skills that they've learned to survive on the street really do not translate well to the world that we want them to live in. So we're really working to try to build some resilient outcomes and some resiliency. So what have we done with ARC? Here's a beautiful model, but then how do you make it real in your agency? First, we had agencies in our network think about their policies and say, okay, are we promoting attachment? Are we promoting regulation? Thank you. And really had them think about what they could do to change policies. We created an ARC interview, an ARC inventory, where each agency reviewed, you know, how do we do this? Where should we improve? We also incorporated it into individual case planning. Case managers would have a session and say, oh, this kid, you know, wigs out all the time, and I don't think we can keep them. And they say, well, is this an attachment issue? Is this a self-regulation? How can we help them build the skills that they need to be successful? So I want to give you a couple examples, because this is actually where it's been the most exciting to see agencies change long-held policies. And policies often that when they think about it, they don't really know where they came from, because they don't really make a lot of sense. One of the agencies in our network had a strict rule that if a kid was out of control, they'd exit them from the program, even if it was in the middle of the night. Obviously not a very safe thing, but they were trying to protect the safety of the other kids in the agency. It was a shelter-based program. But they were really making these kids vulnerable to whatever else was on the street. So once they started thinking about ARC, they said, okay, no youth can be exited from the program until we've had a case conference. And if a kid's out of control, they find a safe place for them to be in the agency. It may not be in their room. It'll be someplace else. And then they really have a chance not to act in that same high place of affect, but to really think, like, what triggered this kid? What set them off? What's going on? Can we work with this kid? How could we work with this kid? What should the conditions? And if there's consequences, what are reasonable consequences? So this is really about knowing how important maintaining that attachment is with the agency, that we're really sometimes their last stop, and helping promote self-regulation, like that we're modeling how to not act in anger or frustration. Before ARC, we really thought that mental health services, that our counselors were really our core treatment providers. And afterwards, we really thought about non-clinical interventions, and we now work with a program called Cirque du Monde that uses circus arts. And what's more about self-regulation if you're learning how to hang from a trapeze or balance? You're kind of using your body to develop some of the skills that your mind hasn't mastered yet. So it's really been wonderful. So then it's the idea that good intervention goes beyond therapy. Through circus arts, kids can build attachments, they can take safe risks that aren't about having unprotected sex, but that may be pushing themselves to master skills that they hadn't before. Before we were thinking about ARC, some of the problem behaviors were not seen always as in the context of traumatic experiences, and now we work really hard with our staff to try to see behaviors and the meaning that lies underneath. And that's, again, about trauma derailing normal development. You can't expect a 16-year-old homeless kid who's been on the streets off and on since they were 12 to be like a 16-year-old kid who's grown up in an intact, supportive family. And really are changing our focus to help kids build new skills. We've done a ton of training, and I think, especially with line staff, knowing that line staff, the people who are the least trained, the least supported, the least skilled in our agencies, actually have the most responsibility as the gateway to services for young people. And we've implemented some cross-network interventions. One is called SPARKS, which stands for Structured Psychotherapy for Adolescents Responding to Chronic Stress. It sounds like a mouthful of psychobabble, but it's really a very positive, skill-focused psychoeducational program for adolescents exposed to chronic stress. So we're continuing our work. This is totally a work in progress. We're building structures to sustain the training and supervision. Our grant ends in a year. We have to think about what do we do, how do we sustain the momentum that we've created. We're really trying to engage agency executives. That's their kind of push up and push down of what we learned through their process. We're creating a mental health plan based on our ARC model. There's another intervention that's out there called Psych First Aid, and we're trying to adapt it for line staff using ARC concepts. It was designed for disaster, terrorism, Katrina situations, and we're thinking about how do we do that in shelters and drop-in centers. And we're continuing to explore new strategies for promoting trauma-informed services. That's it. Thank you.